The highest converting shopper on your site this year is not a person. It's a piece of software acting on behalf of one. According to my guess, it converts roughly 4 times better than a human shopper. Every merchant I talk to has spent the last decade hardening their site against bots, writing 2,000-word product descriptions for SEO, tuning fraud models on human behavior. All 3 of those decisions are now working against them. My guest is Danny Smith. He leads global agentic commerce solution architecture at Stripe. He authored Stripe's technical field guide on how to prepare for this. The agentic commerce suite is in self-service onboarding. Pay-per-call agent traffic is shipping. The merchant question is what to do on Monday morning. Danny, welcome to the Watson Weekly. Danny, I think we need to start in New Orleans because kind of the root of everything. People who are not from New Orleans don't understand the term. There's so many terms. We could start with where do you get your shoes, but we can start from where did you go to school, which never means college in New Orleans because we're not that smart in New Orleans. Yeah. You only assume everyone went to high school.
Yeah, you know, I have an interesting story there. So New Orleans is my home base. Like my entire family is from New Orleans. Like mom and dad, born and raised, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents. Home base for me was uptown New Orleans, like Napoleon and St. Charles. However, my dad was in the Air Force. Mm. So New Orleans is where we always would go to await his orders of where we were going to live for the next 9 months. So I grew up in like England for like the first 4 or 5 years, 6 years of my life, then Oklahoma, then back to New Orleans. So I went to elementary school in like Oklahoma for like a year.
Wow.
And then when my dad got orders to an Air Force base in southern Mississippi, my mom was like, that's it. Like we're an hour outside of New Orleans. We're going to shut it down. If your dad gets orders, he's going to keep going and you're going to go to high school and on like the Mississippi Gulf Coast area. So New Orleans was always home base. I grew up, I spent every summer there just waiting to like see where we're going to go next. Mm. That's why a lot of people ask me like, where's your accent? Like, well,
same here. I don't know why.
Yeah. And my mom's got like the chef's kiss, like perfect, like Cajun New Orleans accent.
Love it.
And so do like all my aunts. But since I was more of like an Air Force kid.
Yeah, darling.
Yeah, exactly. It was always like, you know, okay, New Orleans is home. It was the only place I knew as a home base. But I traveled so much, which is like apropos to my life today.
Right.
Also, that I never like ended up actually going to school. I went to high school just outside of New Orleans, more in like the Mississippi Gulf Coast area.
Yeah. No, that's great. And so how does a New Orleans kid end up at Stripe? Tell me about what are your responsibilities now?
Yeah. You know, a New Orleans kid quickly realizes that, you know, when you're going to college there, I had many interesting jobs. Like I attended bar, I played piano because those guys got better tips. And you realize that, hey, New Orleans is a great place for like people in the industry, that type of industry to live. If you're in tech, maybe
not so much.
Not so much. Like I was going to get my master's in comp sci and I was like, you know, I need to start looking outside of my general neighborhood here to see like, and a lot of my smart friends were moving into like places like Texas Instruments, American Airlines, like in the Dallas area. So I had friends that were there.
So interesting.
So yeah, I just, and actually Texas Instruments came to my college and recruited. So I started out as like a summer intern at Texas Instruments in Dallas and then quickly pivoted to American Airlines. And then if you look at my LinkedIn, it looks like I was job jumping. Honestly, I went through a lot of acquisitions like Saber IT acquired American, EDS, which was a company in Plano, Texas, acquired Saber, HP then acquired EDS. So my job didn't really change. I went through like a lot of acquisitions.
Right.
And I came up on the ops side. So like I was like trying to make sure that like, you know, machines were up and running, that I learned a lot about high availability, fault tolerance, things like that. And so that was the journey that got me out of New Orleans and into like tech. And my general thesis is when I see a bunch of smart people going to a particular company, I start paying attention. Usually like I should probably jump faster than I do, but a lot of smart people I knew were jumping away from the bigger companies and starting their own thing. So I did that for a while. I was with a small startup that got acquired. I started looking at ServiceNow because a lot of my smart like HP friends were going to ServiceNow. So I spent 3 years at ServiceNow doing more like AI and predictive ops there. And also I ran the DevOps pre-sales there. And then a ton of smart people I knew were talking about Stripe, and they were like, hey, you know, fintech's something that you've never done. And a ton of smart people were going to Stripe. Mm. And they actually created a job for me saying, if you want to come over and help run like the partner ecosystem as a solution architect, you know, you can do that and come to Stripe. And I didn't know anything about payments. So I'm one of the rare people that you probably talk to who doesn't come from like a deep payments background. Yeah. I come from like an ops and more like a cloud architecture background.
Yeah.
And fintech to me was always like, oh, payments are easy. It's like, it's a PayPal button. You just press on your screen. Like, quickly realized when I got to Stripe, like how complex everything that's going on behind that button and that checkout actually is. And, I was humbled really quickly when I got to Stripe. And, so that was kind of my journey. And, agentic commerce was something I've always been interested in AI. I've been working with AWS for the past 2 years and took the stage at Sessions, over a year ago, talking about on-site agentic shopping, kind of the early days. And that got me really interested in the concept of like, how can we build more like agentic commerce solutions? And so I teamed up with a lot of my counterparts here at Stripe, and they've been building like amazing solutions. And I'm out there evangelizing these solutions, working with merchants, making sure that, you know, they can go live and really take advantage of this new upcoming. I think it's way more than a trend. It's like, it's an upcoming market landscape that is agentic commerce.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of Sessions, first of all, thanks. You just came off Stripe Sessions and AWS Symposium. Obviously, being on the stage, you have constraints. Being off the stage, maybe you have a few less. What did you not, even if it just get cut for time reasons too, what didn't you get to say that you wanted to say there that you want people to know about?
You know, one of the things, we don't talk about this a lot, but agents right now are actually very poor at shopping because they're trying to read human readable checkouts. So it's not necessarily the agent's fault. It's more like the infrastructure that's in place for a lot of merchants has not been optimized for these agents. So agents are very probabilistic in how they attach things. If you give an agent like your credit card and say, go buy like the best TV, it's going to go shopping and use things like browser automation and web scraping. And it's going to give up half the time because it cannot navigate this human readable checkout. So we're seeing like failures about 2 out of 3 times if you don't have the right infrastructure.
66% failures without the right infrastructure. That's just like default out of the box.
I would say, I mean, basically it's pretty observable. Like if you just give an agent, if you don't have the infrastructure, and that's where Stripe has actually kind of been playing, is we're not building like the autonomous car. We're building like the roads and the traffic signals, right? Like we're building like the actual infrastructure layer that these merchants need and the agents need to be successful. And so like when that infrastructure is in place, we convert at roughly 100% because agents are very good at deterministic outcomes, which is like if you hit this API call, you make this call, it does it correctly 100% of the time, versus if you say, go figure out this 5-page human readable checkout and fill out this form and go through all this, we really look at a pretty low percentage, you know, successful outcome there. So that's one of the things I had to kind of soften at these conferences. It's like, you know, if you don't have your infrastructure in place, you're looking at a very high failure rate. And then another thing I had to kind of soften was all this discussion about protocols. I did like a 6-hour training session like the day before Sessions, and I had people coming in with prepared questions about protocols.
Oh, wow.
And it's like Stripe, you know, we're not necessarily, we're building like solutions on top of protocols. We're not picking like protocol winners. You know, we're on the Tech Council for Universal Commerce Protocol now, and we're building solutions layers on top of protocols. So we don't really care like which standard wins. But every major AI platform, if it's Google, if it's OpenAI, they have their own like honest picture of what they think like platform protocols should look like, what discovery looks like, what transaction standards look like. And at Stripe, we're just looking at like, how do we build solutions kind of independent of this layer? Like, who still talks about TCP/IP, right? Like, you know, like if I'm building a solution, like, am I really talking about?
We're not talking about the protocol.
No, but right now in agentic commerce, we are. So I had to kind of soften a little bit and kind of pivot at these conferences to say like, hey, you know, can we move the conversation away from, let us worry about like the infrastructure layer. Yeah. Let you as a merchant worry about like the solutions layer on how can we help you get your products, you know, scalable out there in these AI marketplaces.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense to do that. And I want to talk about making infrastructure that works for agents. And so obviously a lot of merchants have set up tons of infrastructure to block bots. I mean, that's been the thing to do, right? Using bots to write descriptions for SEO, tuning checkout for human attention, optimizing micro details in the checkout above the fold, the color of the button, where the button appears, all these things, all these decisions are, you're kind of saying that these are working against them.
Yeah. I wrote a whole blog on this, right?
Who's the buyer?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We actually put this stat on stage at Stripe Sessions. It got a couple of gasps actually from the audience, and it's actually an old stat, which is bot automated traffic is 51% of all web traffic.
Yeah.
And that was in 2024. I don't even have like updated stats from like 2025.
Yeah, I believe it.
And so for the first time in internet history, like non-human traffic is the majority. Mm. So like your infrastructure merchants, you're building it for like your normal visitor, and it was built actually for the minority now.
Right.
So that's now flipped. So like the world's best system for infrastructure has been built to block, to your point, like what is potentially your best new buyer.
Yeah.
A high intent buyer these days, an agent, it's going to come in looking exactly like a bot. Like it's going to try and like purchase 50 products in less than 2 seconds. It's going to fill out the form perfectly. There's going to be no mouse hesitation.
Yeah.
These all look like card testing signals.
Right.
And so, but it's really like someone's thought instance.
Which as a payments company, that must drive you bananas.
Right. And it does. And so we've had to build like all new fraud layers that we'll talk about, but basically, and it's not like a card testing attack. It's someone's Claude instance or their OpenClaw or whatever that's just trying to buy where this person has already decided to buy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the conversation these days is the checkout. Mm-hmm. Like once you've gotten to the point of the conversation, like I've decided based on like these hyper-personalized recommendations that, and I've heard you talk about this before, like, you know, you've been in like OpenAI and like, I want this particular, you know, thing. That conversation is really the checkout. You've made your decision.
Right. You're there already. The agent is there to buy.
Yeah.
How much more likely is it for an agent that's visiting a checkout to buy than a regular visitor?
It's 4x. So we're right now we're seeing 4 times better conversion. And this is not like AI magic. It's just literally because of what we just talked about, which is
discovery is done, consideration is done, all those things.
It all happens inside the conversation.
It's like retargeting and digital marketing. It's like those people are already sniffing around. They've already visited you a bunch of times, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. The checkout's like, it used to be the funnel. Like, and now it's not the funnel. It's the finish line.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, and kind of to get back to your question, like, there's really a couple of things that you can do right now to not be blocking this new high intent buyer. And there's 4 major files that I usually talk about. Talked about this quite a bit on stage at sessions, but robots.txt, you can welcome the right agents. I call it like the bouncer versus the doorman scenario, which is like right now. And I actually had a picture of a brick wall at sessions.
Which is funny since you used to work in a bar.
That's where I get like a lot of my, like robots.txt right now, you can configure it to be a bouncer, and which we did for many years, like bot traffic equals
of course.
Bad.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, now you want a doorman where you hand robots.txt a list of like the approved people that can come in. And this is Claude, it's, you know, ChatGPT, it's Gemini. You want to make sure that you're not bouncing those agents. So you don't want to block all, you want to block, you know, the bad agents and let the good agents in.
Right.
Second one is LLMs.txt. So think of this as like an executive summary for agents. So agents they're the most brutally honest shoppers you're ever going to see. Like they don't care about your terms and conditions. They don't care about your about us page. They care about like, what are you selling? What currency is it in? What does your inventory look like? And agents burn through their own tokens right. as they're navigating right. the web. And so yeah. if you start burning too many of their tokens by not giving them a nice executive summary, then they're going to move on. And so lm.txt is basically like, think of it as like the old sitemap.xml.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that exact same thing.
But sitemap has every page on your site indexed. LLMs is like an executive summary saying like, give me just like less than a paragraph for an agent to basically tell me what is this site, what does it do, you know, what does it sell? Give me that executive summary so I don't burn through a lot of tokens. There's also something called AIplugin.json, which is like almost like a brand biography for agents, like basically letting it know like, what does this brand look like? What is my inventory? How can I find if there's another agent on the other end that can help me make this transaction?
So interesting.
There's also OpenAPI YAML, which is like an instruction manual for how am I transacting? Is there a transaction layer here? I showed a lot of this on stage sessions with some new protocols that we've released.
No, I think it's really fascinating here.
It's one of these things, Rick, where it's like, speed is not a UX feature anymore. It's like, it's binary. Like,
wow.
There's like an 800 millisecond threshold. Like 3 seconds is like annoying for humans. 801 milliseconds is like failure for an agent.
Meanwhile, Claude Code is slow as hell. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a long time.
It does. It's because it's building the best outcome, hopefully, for you. But like I said earlier, like we're talking about brutally honest shoppers here that they don't call customer support. They don't care about hero images. They're not going to get swayed by like, you know, some nice picture on the website. There's no A/B testing that it's going to get swayed by. It's basically like you're either in or out based on, can I find the data I need in a fast and easy way, or I'm going to move on. So you cannot like romance this agent into staying on your site based on some of our old like human marketing tricks of, so we got to make sure that it's been optimized for these agents because the cleanest data is going to win. It's not like the prettiest website.
Tax compliance is one of those things that sounds manageable until it isn't. You add a new channel, you expand to a new state, you start shipping internationally. Suddenly, the complexity catches up with you. Tariffs, duties, VAT, jurisdiction rules vary everywhere. And a customer just got hit with an unexpected charge when their order arrived. That's not just a compliance problem. It's a brand experience issue. Avalara is how I solve this for clients. I've been recommending them for years. When we help clients select new providers, Avalara is always the call. Works right inside Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, wherever your brand lives. Accurate tax at checkout, visibility into tariffs and duties before the order ships, and fewer surprises for your customers. If you're scaling into new channels or new markets, don't let the tax layer slow you down. Check out what Avalara has built specifically for growing brands at avalara.watsonweekly.com. I wanted to dig down into payments a little bit more. At Sessions, you introduced sort of a 4 agentic payments model framework. Tell me about that sort of progression from like very human input heavy checkout all the way to sort of like, I mean, futuristic to me, but maybe not other people, stablecoin, wallet transactions, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's really, so you mentioned the 4 payment models. It's really like a trust ladder, basically. Like, so on the bottom of the ladder is the humans fully in control. On the top of the ladder, machines fully autonomous, right? So like model 1, and there's a couple of ways of doing like model 1. We have something called like an on-site AI assistant on your site. And this is where like a lot of merchants need to start to focus on this. Like people are going to expect agentic experiences, not just in ChatGPT or Gemini, but when they go to your website,
right?
No one, you know, the future shopper, and this is, again, human fully in the loop. They're going to expect, like, Amazon's got, like, Alexa for shopping now. Yeah. Walmart's got Sparky.
Can't say Rufus. That's pretty good there.
See, I pivoted because Rufus has been, like, the name got deprecated, although it was, there was a lot of lore behind the Rufus name. It was the first dog ever allowed on AWS's campus. I got that from AWS.
I love it.
So Rufus, there's Rufus lore, but now it's Alexa for shopping. But, yeah, and Ralph Lauren has, like, Ask Ralph. So basically, an AI powered or an agentic powered experience on your own website is going to be expected. And then inside that agent, you're going to expect a buy button. So, and this is the same thing we launched with like OpenAI, ChatGPT. Like there's still a human in the loop where I'm doing the conversation, I'm clicking instant checkout. So that's like model one is, you know, human in the loop. Model two, we've got this notion of agentic tokens. And then Stripe launched the shared payment token. And this is where you're not giving the agent your credit card. You're giving it basically scoped credentials or like a policy engine. I like to say like shopping is going to become, it shifted from a moment to a policy. Like, so right now, like buying something is a moment. Like, oh, I've got this amazing thing. It's a moment for me. I'm going to buy it. In the future, it's going to be a policy where you say, I'm giving you agent X this budgeted amount. I'm giving you like, it's time bound. You can only shop today. It's going to expire. So you're giving it this policy saying, I don't want you to exceed this amount. I want you to go to the following potential websites. You might give it a list of 100. You can decide what the policy is. And then you're going to go about your business. And then you're going to come home and a drone's going to deliver to your front porch, like whatever it is that happened within your policy. So agentic tokens like shared payment token allow you to make sure you cap that budgeted amount, giving it that bounded trust. I use this example a lot, but like if an agent hallucinates, it can add like multiple zeros potentially. I had this happen to me one time and thank goodness there was an agentic token, but I use the example of like, hey, go buy me this model airplane, and the agent hallucinates and tries to buy a real airplane and drains your bank account. Like, so, I mean, agents, we have no idea like what an agent could potentially hallucinate without guardrails. So like model two is making sure that you put some type of guardrails in place that make sure that this experience is hallucination proof. And that the token expires, that the agent doesn't hand that token to another agent. Say, hey, I've got a human's bounded credit card. So that you want to make sure it expires, it's tied to that transaction. And the third thing is you want to have fraud signals built in. Because the previous thing we were talking about, like a card testing attack, everything looks like card testing these days.
Right.
In agentic commerce, Stripe has Stripe Radar that we use to calculate fraud signals that we put inside the tokens. So when we share a token between like a Gemini or OpenAI and like a merchant like Etsy, they're unwrapping those tokens and using those fraud signals to determine whether or not they want to block that transaction. That's inside the token itself. Mm-hmm. So that second model is very much guardrail bound. The third model is like when you're issuing more at like a company's level, not a consumer, and you're basically saying like, you know, instead of an agent, we always talk about agents buying sneakers. Nobody really talks about agents like negotiating your shipping contract.
Yeah.
But if you issue a credit card with, again, those bound restrictions, MCC restrictions, a full audit trail, spend limits, things like that, you can actually have like an end-to-end transaction at the B2B layer using something that we call issuing for agents. And we also have a consumer-facing product called Link Wallet for Agents. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I talk to people all the time that have their OpenClaw instance and they're like, they get scared when it comes to like, oh, well, when it comes to like money, I stop it right there. I'm like, well, what if I told you you could install a wallet CLI for your OpenClaw agent and put these policies in there and basically have full control and it will escalate to you if it goes out. They're like, oh, that'd be perfect. So we launched that. So model three is kind of like a hybrid where you've got autonomy plus human escalation. And then model four is kind of like the sci-fi scenario where you have agents paying for transactions or services of other agents. And there's no human in the loop. There's no checkout. This is what you were talking about, Rick, with like stable coins and like agents aren't going to pay like credit card fees.
Right.
Nobody's going to pay 30 cents to move 1 cent. And so these are like microtransactions between agents. And so that's kind of like model four is full autonomy. And we've launched some solutions in this space, but I think the general market is going to take a little while before we get to full autonomy. But we're building, like I said earlier, the rails before the scale. Like, so we're making sure that everything's there, you know, the roads and the traffic lights. And then as you build like these self-driving cars, you know, we're going to have the rails ready for you. The infrastructure's ready.
And so if you're in the audience as a D2C operator and hearing about all these things, and you mentioned these sort of protocols and formats, what do I do on a Monday morning? How do I think about these things? How do I prepare my team for it? What's real? What should I be caring about?
Yeah. The Monday morning, it's a Great question. I know where I would start. This is where I tell a lot of people to start. Like, open up ChatGPT or open up Gemini, whatever it is you're selling. Say, recommend the best, you know, exercise equipment. I dealt with an exercise company the other day. Like, we're not ready for instant checkout because no one can even discover our product right now. So, like, recommend the best exercise equipment under $500. Does your brand show up? If it does, find out why. If it doesn't, that's your gap analysis.
Right.
You know, one is like about
start with discovery.
Start with discovery. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I think you really need to also start looking at your own website. People are still going to end up on your website, and there's nothing stopping you from building an on-site agentic shopping experience instead of having the normal like SEO powered like keyword search engine on the top of your page. And every time I meet with a merchant, I go directly to their website as I'm talking to them, and 95% of them have no agentic experience on your actual site. So like, where you can start Monday morning is one, going into these chat agents and seeing if your stuff even shows up, discovery. But then also like, start thinking about like, what agentic experience do I have on my site today? Because users are going to expect this going forward. This is something like, no one's going to be wanting to browse through product catalogs and, you know, doing all of the, you know, web browsing that we're used to doing. Right. We're going to really expect an agentic experience, I think, moving forward. So I would start looking at that as well.
You publish a field guide. Walk me through the thinking behind that and your number one takeaway from that guide.
That's good to think about, right? Is like what I was talking about earlier is like the diagnostic of like, what's my gap analysis of why I'm not showing up? What are the moves I can start to take immediately to your Monday morning question? One, go look at that robots.txt and your firewall logs. Are you blocking GPT Podbot, Google Extended? This is like a 1 hour fix.
Right.
And this could be like a massive like upside
for
your website. Like just in like less than an hour to publish that text file. This take you 30 minutes. In the blog, I give examples of other sites that have implemented this where you can find, you can use stripe.com/LLMs.txt as a model. There's a standard. And that's that executive summary for agents that I was talking about. If you don't have this, you're hurting your own traffic at this point. You're hurting your own conversion. I'd look at like my web access firewalls, my WAF rules, and making sure that you're not blocking, you know, agents. Tell them that you're welcome here. You can block with instead of like a 429, you can implement something called machine payments protocol that we talked about earlier, which is the ability to respond with like payment required. This is like, this is a protocol that's been around for like 30 plus years, like since the 90s. It just was never used because there was no monetization layer.
Right.
To basically say that, okay, if payment's required, like there was no microtransaction monetization layer that even existed. Now we've got that. We've got the ability, if you're selling, for example, like content, instead of allowing these web agents to scrape your content for free, you can actually implement machine payments. You can go to mpp.dev and look at, can I put this paywall in front to actually just charge other agents or browser agents like microtransactions? So you can monetize. So that's three things you can look at in basically one afternoon that will help you change like your discoverability on every major AI surface overnight. And then I would honestly start looking at things like your fraud. Like, how are you governing fraud today? I would start to kind of refactor. Like making sure that you're not just looking at human readable fraud signals, because human fraud signals and agentic fraud signals are completely different. Like an agent comes in, doesn't have the variability of a human. So you can't look at things like how many browser clicks did they get to a purchase, or did they pass capture or not?
Yeah.
And like, all these things are irrelevant to an agent. So you want to make sure that you're looking at your fraud vectors and your fraud analysis in more of like an agentic way. These are things that you can start to think about starting on Monday.
This has been, I think, really great, Danny. Some of these things, anything I didn't ask you about that you would like to land with the audience?
No, I think, yeah, definitely, you know, one of the things to land is that this is real. It's actually here. We've got real statistics that are like backing this up. I will say that with the merchants that we have launched with, it's, you know, it's less than like single digits percentage these days. But, you know, think of like mobile traffic back in like 2011, which was like single digits. And those who kind of bet against that, once it got to 20%, were like scrambling to catch up. Right. So we've had companies like Adobe went and looked at like a trillion plus retail visits, and they see like almost a 400% year over year retail increase with AI traffic. It converts over 40% better. Shopify just shared with us like they have 13x growth year over year in their AI referred orders. You know, I mentioned earlier 4x better conversion. So I would definitely think of this as like, this is bigger than like an emerging trend. This is coming, and it's going to change the way we think about like interacting with, you know, not only websites, but I've said this one time, like agent is the new storefront. Like you want to make sure you're building for humans, but also for agents, because agents don't abandon carts. They just, like I said earlier, they decide and they move on. So you want to basically build for like this new high intent buyer to make sure that, you know,
what's going
to
happen to my Klaviyo flows if they don't abandon carts? I'm in big trouble.
They're going to decide and move on, Rick.
Oh man. Can I send the agent a text message or something? Okay. Like, well, with attentive? Yeah,
we can build in some automation.
I'm screwed up, Ben. It's my highest converting flows. You just killed them.
No. This is where Stripe can help. Like we'll build that layer for
you.
It will sort itself out, Rick. Just like the New Orleans Saints this year with a new quarterback, we're going to sort ourselves out.
just shuck it. It's all I'm saying that right now.
Oh, just shug it. Hey, this could be, you know, Saints could surprise some people this year. I'm looking forward to the season for once.
it'll be exciting. We finally have a coach that seems to focus on the offense again. Last year, the Eagles wished they had Kellen Moore back, I saw. So I think we're in a good spot, man.
I agree. Let's root for the Saints, as you know, true NOLA kids should do. And I'm excited. And it was really fun talking to you. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Danny. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Anytime, Rick.